Support for WPR comes from Present Music, performing honest music with guest violist and curator Nadia Sirota, May 9th at 8 at the Milwaukee Art Museum. Tickets and info are at presentmusic.org.
According to a new survey, over half of us are feeling optimistic that our financial situations can improve in 2014. Good news, right? But our guest says there's a downside that a return of better times may lead us to repeat past mistakes.
Gail Cunningham joins us now. She's with the National Foundation for Credit Counseling. Gail, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. There should be an interesting conversation.
I think so. Well, let's start with this optimism. That sounds like a good thing, right? People are feeling optimistic.
Well, they certainly are to a degree. We've seen automobile vehicle sales tick up. There are some indications, though, that delinquencies over on the vehicle side are also on the upswing. So that's concerning. But it's time that people really take a hard look at their finances. They've scrimped and saved and cut back, and thank goodness they've paid down debt, too, for a good many years. So some of them are in pretty good shape. Those aren't the people I'm terribly worried about, although I will send them a word of caution. But there are certainly a lot of people in households across the country that are not in shape to begin spending again.
So people are feeling optimistic about finances, maybe because they've saved money, maybe because it's a new year and people are inclined to feel more optimistic and the economy shows signs of moving in the right direction for people. What is your fear here when people are experiencing this kind of financial optimism?
Well, in our recent poll, 56% of respondents indicated that they projected they would be in a better place financially at this same time next year. So that was a very strong response, tripling the next highest category, where only 18% of respondents thought that their situation would be about the same as last year. So there's a strong trend toward feeling like rosier days are ahead. And that's really good. And I like that. I like to hear it about people that maybe that financial monkey's off their back. They can breathe again. So in spite of it being a healthy sign, it's going to take more than hope and more than a New Year's resolution to make a financial success a reality. And what I'm afraid of is that people are falling into financial amnesia. That's what I'm calling the affliction of too quickly forgetting the financial mistakes and the financial pain of the past.
So what do we do to avoid financial amnesia? What do we do to stay on track and keep our finances moving in a good direction, reducing debt and saving?
Well, I always tell people to approach financial decisions with their head, not their heart. So one thing you need to do is face the financial facts and know where you stand. As they say, you can't know where you're going until you know where you are. So you need to start with a financial plan. And what better time of the year? We are at a time of new beginnings. So let's take a fresh look at our finances. And also, you're going to be pulling out all sorts of documents for your tax return. So take advantage of that and get your finances organized. You know, I don't care if people have a full-blown home office or if they have an accordion file. I want them to be able to put their fingers on their financial documents, certainly their monthly bills, their bank statements, along with any investments that they have and their will and other medical directives, et cetera. That should be at their fingertips. You shouldn't have to dig for that. And while I'm on my soapbox, I'll say and let someone else know where those documents are too. So that's going to all get you in your financial ducks lined up, and you'll be in a better shape to make financial decisions.
How do we, when we look at our personal finances, get a sense for where the danger zones are, the places that we particularly need to put in a little work?
Well, I think, again, once you know who you owe and how much you owe them. Basically, I'm talking about laying out all of your financial obligations, current debt obligations on that proverbial kitchen table as a start. Then that's going to be very eye-opening. You know, a lot of people absolutely dig their heels in and refuse to track their spending. Why? Because they know that if they see their spending staring back at them in black and white, it may suggest that they make some changes in their behavior, their spending patterns, and they're scared to do that. But, you know, we're all adults. If we're old enough to have money and owe money, make money and owe money, then we're old enough to treat it responsibly. And that starts with knowing where our hard-earned money goes. So I suggest that even though you can't predict the future, you can plan for it and you can prepare for it. And it all starts with knowing where your money goes. It's really a shame that we work so hard for our money and then we so frivolously spend it. I want people to spend their money mindfully, not mindlessly.
Now, I know you advocate a few different ways to save. One area I gather is for unexpected things that might come up. You know, your car breaks down. Another, though, is for longer term ups and mostly downs in the path. Let's say you're out of work for 6 months. You want people to have some savings for that. And then maybe for things that are fun. But we know about birthdays, trips, travel. How do we spend or how do we save for those different categories?
You know, people tell me all the time, Gail, I can't afford to save. And I tell them, you can't afford not to. And I apologize for any double negative I just used, but I think the audience gets the idea. The financial emergency is going to rear its ugly head at the most inopportune time. I like to see people save in categories. Now, everyone needs that rainy day fund, that emergency money that's for the flat tire or the maintenance, you know, the plumbing need, et cetera. If you don't have a well-funded savings account for the unexpected emergency, then you're left with poor resolution options, such as taking money from a higher priority. Maybe you take your rent money. Maybe you take some money that should be going to utilities, et cetera. That starts a downward spiral there because the problem's only going to grow. You're going to rob Peter to pay Paul, and before you know it, Peter wants his money. Another option is that you borrow from friends or family. Well, at best, that's awkward to do. And another option is that you charge the emergency, and that usually is piling new money, new debt on top of existing obligations, again, adding to a burdensome debt load. So let's fix it. Let's start by saving 10% of every check. Sock that away into a savings account at the end of a year. You'll have a little more than a month's income, which should sustain you through most short-term emergencies. Now, here's a little trick I like for people to use. You know, they may be thinking, well, yeah, that's nice in theory, and that sounds really good, 10% of each paycheck to savings, but I can't really do that. Well, how about $10? Could you save $10 out of each spending category? Could you carve $10 off your grocery budget, off your clothes budget, off of each utility payment, et cetera? If you have 10 spending categories and you shave $10 off of each, you've got an extra $100 per month to put toward debt reduction. And guess what? You'll never feel it. You will absolutely never miss that money.
So basically you're saying we should kind of whittle it down until it gets to the amount that we can feel comfortable about, that it's something that, you know, we can swallow.
That's right. Find that money to put either into savings at 10 bucks out of each category, or pay down debt or invest it. Whatever you want to do, it's your money. And one of the easy ways, I mean, everybody knows intuitively when money's tight that you need to tighten the budget belt, but they don't quite know how to do it, or it sounds too big. So I'm saying $10 doesn't sound too big to anyone, I hope. And just keep multiplying that over and over, and you will find hidden money in your budget to spend as you choose to spend it that's right for your family. Another thing I like people to do, as long as we're laying out all our bills on the kitchen table, is get a piece of paper and divide it into columns of who you owe, mm-hmm. how much you owe, what is that interest rate, and what does that interest rate translate to in a dollar amount? So if you're a numbers person, you're really going to want to jump in and do something about that high interest rate debt, because you know that that's really doing you the most harm. But that can be a very daunting exercise. You owe $5,000 at 19% interest. It's going to take a long time to pay that off. But if you're a numbers person, you get it, and you will be motivated by those small incremental changes in that balance.
I think a lot of people are motivated to pay down debt, but I mean, what about prioritizing the debt and then saving for the emergency cash? So you've got that in hand too. How do you do both those things at the same time?
Well, let me tell you one other little trick for the person who does not relate to long-term dig into the APR debt that's so high. I say then those people need to start with the smallest debt and work up. And also, you mentioned rewards. I want people to reward themselves. But, you know, you're thinking, well, Gail, you just said it's a $5,000 balance. It's a long time till I get my reward. No, I want you to set small incremental goals. When you have knocked out that first 500 of the $5,000 debt, 10% of any debt, first 10% that you pay off, you reward yourself and set that goal in advance. It may be that you get to go to a sporting event or a concert or eat at your favorite restaurant, whatever, but reward yourself, and then that motivates you to keep going. Now, you've asked the big question, should I pay down debt or should I save? You should do both. And it's really, I could make an argument on both sides. Financially, I could run the numbers for people and show you how much harm debt is doing you. But I also know how much financial distress can come from an emergency where you have no emergency.
And we've just got about 20 seconds left for that long answer.
Well, and I want to go back to my columns. That fourth column was the amount, the dollar amount of interest you're paying every month. That is eye-opening. That will motivate you to do something about your debt, because that money could be going into your pocket and you spending it as you wish, where you're not having to service debt with it.
Gail, thank you so much for joining us and for sharing your wisdom as well.
Thank you for having me.
And that was Gail Cunningham with the National Foundation for Credit Counseling.